This is Bottomley, Reel 2.
The drumhead service was very interesting. I'd not seen anything like it before, although I'd lived among soldiers most of my life. My father died when I was 8. We lived next door to Chelsea Barracks, and I used to go in Chelsea Barracks to play with the soldiers' children, you see. So I lived among soldiers' children and that sort of thing. And before we lived next to Chelsea Barracks, we lived by, very near to, I lived always in Chelsea, we lived very near to, that's Sloane Square, Chelsea, Duke of York School. The Duke of York School, when I was small, was a home for soldiers' orphans. And they were brought up in a military manner so that we could hear Reveille every morning and Lights Out every night. I went to bed by Lights Out when I was quite small. And these soldiers' orphans lived in the Duke of York School. And then it was taken over, they moved them out, just before the war, I think, down to Dover, to a school in Dover. And the Territorial Army took it over. And my school was next door to it, and we used to use their grounds to play hockey and cricket and that sort of thing. So the Duke of York School was second nature to me, and then we moved to Pimlico. Do you know Pimlico? Next door to Chelsea Barracks, practically. So I was always within sound of bugles and military music and that sort of thing, because we lived by the back door of the Chelsea Barracks, and the guards used to go out every morning to Buckingham Palace to change the guards, you see. So they used to pass the house. Anyway.
Did that have an effect on your joining the army?
Probably. I'd got it in my blood. In fact, my mother used to... in those days, soldiers wore red coats, and my mother used to warn us against, we hadn't to talk to soldiers, they were regarded rather as scum in the old days. Anybody that couldn't get a job anywhere else or had done something wrong, been in prison, they could join the army, you see. And I think they got about fourpence a day. They didn't get much. But they got their food and their uniform and were kept clean and decent. But we used to call them penny red herrings, in a rude sort of way. And my mother, we hadn't to talk to soldiers at all. But I could go in the married quarters and mix with the children. She never minded that. I don't know why, because most of the children were officers' children. They were better class. Now, in that place where I used to play, it was the year before I went round there, just nostalgia, you know, looking at old haunts. And they've got skyscrapers where they used to have little flats. It's all different. However, there was a clergy there. It was a religious service and a band, military band. And they had these drums sort of piled up, three at the bottom, then two, and then one on the top, in a sort of pyramid, and flags across them. And it was very impressive. They marched about with them and with the flags and dipped them and did all sorts of things. And it was the first time I'd ever been at a drumhead service. And it was to send us on our way, with going into battle, I suppose. However, after that drumhead service, we were now in uniform and on view to the public. We were like something out of a circus or something. People used to gaze, you know, and turn round and look at it. You know, in a derogatory sort of way. We weren't really accepted at the beginning. Much criticism, adverse and otherwise. On August the 9th, there was great excitement as we were ordered to assemble in the chapel for the reading of the names on the first draft for overseas. I was very thrilled to hear my name, but disappointed that my friend Elsie wasn't on the list. Incidentally, I lost sight of her after that meeting and have never seen her again. They promised that she would come where I'd gone. They promised to keep us together, but they didn't keep that promise. They promised sisters to be kept together. But once you got out there, that was all waived. They didn't keep the promises. Now everything became hustle and bustle, ready for going abroad. We left Farnborough and stayed overnight at Connaught Club. I remember that was a dreadful night. Dr. Peake, they fetched Dr. Peake to me because I was still suffering from inoculations. And the journey up to London had just about churned me up, and carrying a heavy suitcase. And I must have been a bit delirious because I remember seeing her coming. She gave me a dose of something. Anyway, I was okay next morning. Next morning, after embarkation drill, we marched through London to Charing Cross Station, carrying our suitcases, which got steadily heavier. We also had a trailer on at the back of boys and girls that had tagged on, you know, more or less marching with us. And we were something of an oddity. We embarked at 5:45 onto a troop ship. This is the point at which I realised that there was a war on. Some of the men on board were extremely rude to us. Some dully resented our intrusion. Others regarded us as a joke. You know, they tried to take the mickey and be comical. But we'd been told before that we should have this sort of thing to contend with and to maintain our dignity at all, in all cases. Where are we? Some of the... Oh, I've got that down, haven't I? I regarded us as a joke. At 6:30 p.m. the ship began to move. And I shall never forget the awful feeling I had as I saw my beloved country slipping away from view. It was the first time I had been away from England. We had to wear life belts for the whole of the journey from Folkestone to Boulogne. And when we were well out into the channel, there were battleships either side of us. On arrival, we were marched to a boathouse on the River Liane and had a hunk of bread and cheese and a mug of tea. We slept on the floor on 3 biscuits or little army mattress filled with straw, very hard. They were square and 3 made into a pallet bed, and you fastened them together with a blanket. Put your blanket sort of... Very often, the bottom one left you in the middle of the night, but that wasn't... We got used to that after a while. You learnt to make your bed properly. They called them biscuits, army mattresses. We'd a very disturbed night, as there were troops coming down from the line all night, whistling and singing and shouting, on their way up the hill to the delousing station. Incidentally, the blankets which we slept in had not been disinfected after being previously used by troops. Consequently, several of us developed body lice, which wasn't a nice way to start our active service. They're not like head lice, you know, which most school children have at some period. No, they're horrible things. They're about twice the size of head lice, and, they're horrid, that's all. In fact, I had to report it to the nurse when I got to Abbeville, and they seem to breed in the seams of your underclothes and in warm spots under your arms and places like that. Are we on? At one reunion at Derry and Tom's, I hadn't been for some while, and I sat at the Abbeville table. And there was a grey-haired lady sitting opposite me, and she kept looking at me. And then eventually, we were halfway through our lunch, and she pointed at me, she said,
White.
That was my single name. Oh, I remember you now. You see, we've all grown older. And I didn't remember her. I said, should I remember you? She said, of course, we deal-ales together. And everybody at the table roared with laughing. Deal-ales together. And I said, is it Robbie? She said, yes. And she's changed her name twice since then. She's been married twice. But we had a good old natter afterwards. These reunions are marvellous, you know. There aren't many of us left now. But Robbie and I, we were both on that draft and we both got these horrible things. Anyway, we got rid of them eventually. I was not greatly impressed by Boulogne. It seemed to me a dirty, dilapidated town. But then we went no further than the waterfront and the railway station. The railway station is rather a scream. The French trains, I don't know whether they still do it, because I've not been to France since, but at that period, they used to give a terrific, shrill shriek, the whistle, you know, and frighten the life out of you. Every now and again, there were these terrific shrieks. Thought I'd come to a madhouse. And the trains are very primitive. There were then. Most of the troops went in cattle trucks, but we weren't having any of that. We got into a first-class carriage and had an awful... I pretended I didn't know any French. And at the finish, he threw his hands up and left us where we were. But we were travelling with a different class of ticket, you see, and he wanted to shift us, but we were out for a bit of comfort. The party who arrived with me were split up. Some went up, some stayed in Boulogne, some went to Etap, and all various towns to various bases. Just two of us went on to Abbeville-sur-Somme. The funny thing happened when we got to the... A girl called Richardson came with me. When we got to Abbeville station, of course we just stood there and looked around for somebody to claim us. And this officer came up and she said, are you for Abbeville? We said, yes. Have you? Is it? And she looked on her list. She said, White and Richardson. We said, yes. She'd been expecting us. So Richardson said, can we go to the toilet, you know, to the lavatories? She said, oh, yes, they're just there. And apparently they're men and women alike. And we pushed the door open, there was a man in. We got the fright of our lives. That was just one little surprise that we soon got. We were met by a WAC officer in an army wagon, which bumped us along a rough road to Motor. To Camp 1, AMTD, Advanced Motor Transport Depot. We lived in a Nissen hut, a half-round, corrugated iron-roofed, igloo-like building, lined with wood and heated with the cast-iron circular stove, stuck out into the hut, and the chimney going through the outer wall to clear the roof. I might tell you, that chimney was... perfect nuisance at times. It was the chimney went up from the stove and then at right angles and out into the air. But that at that right angle bend, there was a join, you see, to join the two pieces together. And it was always coming apart. And when that thing came apart, everything in the hut was covered with soot and smoke. It was perfect nuisance. It was all one room and we had nine beds in the room, and one end was boarded off for the NCO, a cubicle. The NCO had one bed in it and a little sort of dressing table affair. But we were in, the other ranks were in ordinary, well, the troops called them hospital luxury beds. We were in army beds. Hospital beds, nine, one in a line with the NCO's hut as you went in, and the others this way. There were four, for that side, and four, that's eight, and one this way, nine. Now, when we first went, it was so cold. Oh no, in the winter it was cold, when we started pushing our beds together and using two lots of blankets to keep ourselves warm. But we were stopped at that. We weren't allowed to sleep together. For some reason or other, it's not hygienic. It's not done. So we had to sleep in our own beds. However, together, so that we had two lots of blankets, you see, and we were warmer. We're terribly cold in the winter. Because after a while, we made our own comfort by buying clothing to suit the weather. And I had some knee-length boots, and they laced up to there, and then hooks, you know, up to your knee nearly, is to undo them and pull your foot out. And in the morning, they were frozen to the floor. And you put your foot in to warm it, to thaw it. And then you can pull one another off the floor with your boots. It was so cold. I don't think I've experienced such coldness since. Tower Hill Barracks. Our beds in France weren't like those. Those were old-fashioned army beds. I think they'd come from the Boer War or something like that. They were an iron bedstead. They were made for packing, to pack up for troops moving about. And they sort of two fitted together, but the tricksters fitted them so that they just barely held up. And when you put any weight on, they collapsed in the middle, you see. And it caused great fun.